In our most recent episode, we told you about Armchair Travel. It's our event on March 13th. Today, we'll jump ahead a little bit and we'll take you straight to Berlin. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. Now, if you're in any which way in the same position that I'm in, you know very little about Berlin. At least I have to claim complete and absolute ignorance. Other than what the news media and history has told us about Berlin, I know next to nothing. So in our best GAI here in their fashion, we enlisted help. And for that, I get to welcome two guests. Once again, Erin Holt, our Director of Communication. But then we are jumping across the pond and we are talking with one of our former GAI students who now lives in Berlin and can give us a first-hand account. Hannah, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Erin, good to see you again.
Thanks, you too.
So before we dive into you and Berlin and how you actually got there, I just wonder, let's cover the basics first. What is the current mood, the current trajectory in Berlin? What do the Berliners think about 2021? How has it started? How is the feeling over there?
Well, like everywhere in the world, the mood here is pretty much entirely determined, wrapped up in the pandemic. And we're currently in a pretty strict lockdown. All non-essential businesses are closed, schools are closed, and as much as possible, you're required to work from home. And we went through this before, but now I think for everyone, it's a bit more taxing because of the weather. You can't go out and just be in the sun and enjoy the summer weather. You're just really stuck inside watching the rain and the gray. So I think it's definitely a bit downer of a mood here, but I think most people are optimistic for a better spring and summer.
You said strict lockdown. Before we define what that actually truly means in terms of just essential services, is that different to the US? How long is the lockdown supposed to last this time around?
Well, the current end date is February 15th, but I don't think anybody is taking that terribly seriously because, of course, it'll be extended, assuming the infection numbers continue as they are. I can't really say it's possible that that is the end date.
So the situation is overall not dissimilar than the situation here. Let's dial back though. How did you actually get to the GAI? How did we get to you? Just fill us in a little bit on your backgrounds, just the personality, the personal story of Hannah.
Sure. So I grew up in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and I started becoming interested in things related to the German language and Germany because my ancestors were German and I started being interested in genealogy. So then when I started learning languages in school, I chose German and then had the opportunity to do a high school exchange in Germany and continue to study German at the university level. And then I came back to the US for a while and then in around 2015. But then I decided that I would like to go back to school and get my master's and that Berlin would be a great place to do that. But my German was a bit rusty. And so I decided to, I wanted to get in touch again with taking German classes. And I did so at the GAI with Claudia Avand and Katrin Edman, their classes. And then I left for Berlin within a year or so after that.
Okay, so significant German experience before you actually signed up for classes at the GEI, and I believe you topped out at C1 at C1 level.
Yes. Yeah, that's the class I most recently took at the GAI.
Which makes me wonder, is German a prerequisite to study in Germany?
It is, depending on the program that you are in. It actually is not for my program because it's all taught in English. But most other master's programs require usually a B2 German certification of some kind.
Well, yeah, I was just wondering, Hannah, what you were studying over there.
I'm studying economics at the Humboldt University. So I'm in a program for economics that's geared towards international students economics and management science.
Okay, that's awesome. I studied for a semester at Humboldt.
Oh, really?
Back in 2001. So, yeah, right around the corner from you, probably.
Which faculty at Humboldt?
So I was in Sozialwissenschaft.
Okay.
Sozialwissenschaften, perhaps. When I was doing my semester abroad, I also took a couple classes at the FU, at the Freie Universität, in Germanistik. So.
Well, I'd be really interested to hear more about your experiences since the early 2000s. Obviously, we're a very different time in Berlin than now. And yeah, it's I'm very interested to hear what that experience was like.
Oh my gosh, I feel so old. I'm going to back it up a tiny bit further. So the first time I ever went to Berlin was actually in 1997. And so I did a trip through the AATG, the American Association of Teachers of German. And we spent 3 weeks in Nuremberg and 1 week in Berlin. And at that time, you know, it was so different, Berlin in 1997 versus 4 or 5 years later when I was there. Potsdamer Platz was they had this info box, this red box. And it was they said it was the largest construction site in the world. And it truly was. It was you went up in this tower, in this box. it was this panoramic view, and all you could see, Berlin was just cranes, the construction and the infrastructure, and you know that they were working on the U-Bahn in the east and the Straßenbahn and streets and buildings, and so it was fascinating to me, that little taste. And then yeah, when I was back in 2001, and then I lived there from 2003 to 2006, Potsdamer Platz was done. So there was the movie theater, the Arkaden, the mall, so many places in the east had gotten a facelift. Buildings that had been gray were pastel colored and looking very beautiful. There were we're starting to get more businesses, a burrito restaurants and Starbucks and stuff like that. So it was definitely changing. When I was there, it had this vibe of, the arts, because there was two of everything, two operas, there were so many symphonies and orchestras, and there you could go see anything for free. The theater scene, a lot of galleries, experimental stuff. When I was there, the Palazzo de Republik, the old Palace of the Republic of the GDR, where the East German Parliament met, and they had folks concerts and I think a bowling alley and other stuff, that was still up. And I think now there's a reconstructed castle in its place. A lot of changes. Yeah.
So what of everything that Erin has described is actually still there? How much has changed?
Well, starting off with the last bit, yeah, that's the site of the former Palast der Republik is a decision that I am still quite bitter about, because I think it would have been a really interesting thing to keep in the architecture of Berlin, this old East German parliament and building that had a lot of meaning to the citizens of the GDR. And instead they tore it down and replaced it with a reconstruction of the old Hohenzollern castle, but it's reconstructed out of concrete, and it just seems very, I don't know, very soulless. And there's also a lot of controversy because they decided to include, they're calling it the city castle, the Berliner Schloss, and they've also decided to keep the cross on the top, which is alienating to a lot of people. And yeah, I don't know.
Do you remember some of the reasoning that led to the old palace being torn down and then replaced with something that is, as you just said, rather soulless?
Yeah, I don't, maybe Aaron, you know more better than I do, but as far as I understand, it was just kind of in the wave of sort of out with the communist decisions. I think in particular from the CDU wanting to kind of purge Berlin, purge Germany of the old communist influence, but maybe there's more to it.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little dusty in my mind. I think like on the surface, they said that the building had asbestos or something, or needed two expensive renovations to like be safe or to exist. So I think that was like the surface reason. But yeah, I think what you're saying is right, Hannah, that they wanted the leadership in Germany and Berlin wanted Berlin to be this like global capital, like London or Paris. And so sort of having the Palace de Republic just didn't like fit in with that aesthetic. So, and it's too bad because like I was absolutely fascinated by it. I got to take a tour of it before they tore it down. And it was at this point they had stripped it of like the furniture and it was just an empty kind of building. And I think there was like a modern dance group. I mean, this is like typical Berlin or typical for the theater scene, but like it was taken over by like these modern dancers. And so you could like go in, like wander through this, like it was almost haunted, and see dancers sort of recapturing the space. It was almost like wandering through a maze, but it was very interesting. I don't really understand the meaning behind that particular art installation, but anyway, you know what I mean, right?
Hannah, you mentioned perhaps some cleansing, purging of the tenor, if you will, of communism. With Berlin being the old border city with the Berlin Wall and whatnot, are there still remnants of division, if you will, between I am a Western German and you are from one of the new states? Is that still going on? We've had conversations about it in the past. I'm wondering whether that has changed in recent, perhaps, 2 or 3 years.
From my perspective, I tend to notice a difference in demeanor between West Germans and East Germans. I mean, I don't want to make any kind of too strong of generalizations, but at least from what I can sense, I do still see somewhat of a difference. But I haven't observed that resulting in feelings of division or clashing among people. Just kind of difference in demeanor.
So as the observer, what are the differences? Is it visual? Is it behavior? Just really demeanor? Is it a combination of the two? To which degree? And what would the discerning onlooker, the observer, have to pay attention to actually pick up on that?
I don't know. I one thing that I notice as a big difference, and maybe other people haven't had this experience, but I seem to encounter a much more vocally critical view of the United States from West Germans, which is maybe somewhat ironic or counterintuitive. but that's an attitude that I've noticed of that I see more in West Germans, attaching my country to my identity and also being more vocal with criticism, which I don't mind at all, because I'm happy for people to speak their opinion, but I just haven't encountered that as much with East Germans.
What are some of the critical views of the Western Germans that you have been told, considering that you are an American?
I haven't met a single German who had a positive view of Trump, which is not surprising. That's the big one, I think. Okay. And then, of course, environmental policy. I think those are the two big things.
Of course, the pandemic is riding with us all along the way. Were there any opinions from the Germans, if you will, looking at the U.S. and how the pandemic is being handled, how COVID is being addressed here versus there?
Again, this is just my experience, so I don't know if this is generalizable, but I actually haven't encountered a lot of people being directly critical of the U.S.'s handling of the pandemic, mostly because I think people are understandably more kind of wrapped up in what their own country's policy is, especially because while the global view of how Germany has handled the pandemic has been largely positive, Germans themselves haven't actually seemed to view the German policies the same way. And so because of that, I don't think that your average German is necessarily going to look across the pond and have a sense of like, well, we're doing everything great and they're screwing it all up, because they don't feel, I think, entirely like the German policies have been the best either. So.
Okay. Erin?
Well, I was just going to say that makes sense. I think like when I talk to friends in Germany or my sister, who has actually been on this podcast, she lives in Hamburg. My sense is that it's like Americans who live in Germany who are like pointing across the pond saying, well, what is going on in my country? Like, why is this so bad? But yeah, I think what you said is exactly right.
Yeah. I think the one area though, where there's been a lot of head scratching is around the issue of masks. Since that, other than a relatively small group of conspiracy theorists in Germany, the mask hasn't become an object of like political debate. Pretty much everyone is on board with that being at least one important tool in fighting the pandemic, and they don't really understand how this became such a politically divisive thing in the U.S.
Reeling it back a little bit, we talked earlier just briefly about the intention of making Berlin a more international city, such as London and Paris and what have you. So, for instance, Erin mentioned Starbucks and basically the influences that pop culture to some degree, businesses that are just jumping borders without much of an issue. I wonder whether the influences are felt perhaps on a local level. So, for instance, Starbucks rolling in. I'm not exactly sure about the coffee house culture in Berlin, but if it's anything similar to Vienna, it's a pretty strong culture. And Starbucks coming in, for instance, certainly affects that to some degree. Have you seen effects like that in Berlin?
That's a really good question. So my first time actually in Berlin was actually in 2012. When I was introducing myself, I forgot to mention that I actually also spent a semester here at the Freie Universität in 2012 as a part of an undergraduate exchange. And so there was about a 6-year gap between the first time I was in Berlin and when I came back. And even just those 6 years, so long after the reunification of the city, I noticed so much change just even in that time. And so I bet for Erin, between, 2006 and now, would be even more stark of a difference. And I think, and one thing that has changed that goes along with, I think, where your question was heading is the city is much more international now in terms of the people who live here. Everywhere in the city has large populations of people from all over the world, different parts of Europe, North America, South America. You encounter people from Israel a lot of people immigrating from China and Korea and Japan. So you just feel it in the population being very international. And I think now that's also influenced the type of amenities that are available that I think maybe didn't used to be. For example, the different types of cuisine that are accessible now. That was a big change between 2012 and 2018, is how many different types of cuisine that you can get now that you didn't used to be able to. And it's gotten a lot more expensive, unfortunately, as well. I think the favorite thing for people in Berlin to complain about is how the rising rents, because the rents here have gone up so dramatically since the 2000s. And it causes a lot of concern, because part of what made the culture of Berlin so unique and thrive so much was that it was such an affordable place for people, creative people, to live. And a lot of people are being driven out of the city because of that as well. So it's more global and lively, but also you have this very concerning consequence of that as well.
I wonder whether the slow internationalization of the city of Berlin has fundamentally changed the culture, and if the Berliner actually recognizes the change in culture with perhaps a greater variety of food sources, but also rising rents, more people who speak German not as a native language anymore. Is that being recognized, or is it just this creep effect that just happens and nobody actually pays attention to that?
Oh, no, I think it's definitely noticed and acknowledged. And there are some people who treat these kinds of changes with concern and regret about the change. But to be honest, most people that I've met who are from Berlin just kind of take it as it is, because Berlin is a city that's never stopped changing. And so they recognize that it's never stopped changing and it will continue to change. And to want this change to stop and encapsulate Berlin as it is in a certain time period is sort of antithetical to the spirit of this incredibly dynamic city. I think that's a more common attitude that I've noticed over people being resentful or frightful of the change.
Erin, have you noticed the onset of that change when you were there already? Or is that really more a recent development?
I think it was definitely starting when I was there. I just want to say, I think Hannah is exactly right in what she just said. That I think it was also one of my favorite things about Berlin, is that it was always changing, or it is always changing, and that you could see the change. Like, I feel like I never saw a city before that like was always in that like the state of like reinvention and like always like questioning the identity of the city, and that it just like wears the past on its sleeve in some way, even in like the sort of clumsy cover up like of Palazzo Republic. I think like those I feel like the average Berliner could have those discussions about the city and monuments and memorials and architecture that like I never had so many conversations about that type of thing before in my life. I like that you can see history, that you can see the future. And I think that everything is together. So it makes sense to me that Berliners are kind of like, yeah, that's how it is here.
Coming from the perspective of an international student, could you get by just with English? Considering our conversation in the beginning, your German is near just perfect. Could you get by?
Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people that do not speak German at all. I think there's a big difference between getting by and really thriving. Because I think when you don't speak any German, you encounter a lot of frustrations, particularly with bureaucracy and unfortunately some interpersonal hostility. But in terms of getting by, absolutely, you could just use English.
Would you consider that understanding the language also fundamentally leads to understanding the culture, or is that something that perhaps runs independent?
That's a really big question. I would like it to not be true, but I think it really is important to at least have a like passing understanding of German to really dig into the culture. Just because there's a lot that hasn't been translated, and you can, for example, for me personally, it's very important in order for me to feel in touch with my environment. It's very important for me to be in touch with just the basic news of the city. You know, the public works projects that are happening, the local politics, and a lot of that news really isn't available widely in English. So yeah, so that's one thing that's I think is important. And also, I think it's hard for people, and this goes for myself in terms of describing American culture. I think it's hard for people to really articulate themselves in the deepest way in a foreign language. And so it's easiest to get in touch with someone's culture via their native language, typically.
Going back to the 2000s, Erin, when you remember your 3 years in Berlin, what were some of the difficulties, some of the challenges that you encountered?
I remember Berlin is just enormous. I mean, I think I didn't expect it to be, like, from, like, the surface area. I had no idea. It's just huge. I mean, getting from one end of the city to the other on, you know, public transportation. I'm not the safest person on a bicycle. If I wanted to be a real Berliner, I would probably get one, but I would have some learning to do. But yeah, just that it would take you like an hour to get from, you know, to a party or something. I don't know if things have sped up, probably not. But yeah, I think sometimes, what was challenging? I definitely, you know, my German at the time was fine. It was not perfect. But I did find going to like the authorities to be intimidating, like the Ausländerbehörde, I forget how to translate that. Like the authorities for like immigration and, you know, residence permits. I found that to be intimidating. Did I translate that terribly? Gunter, translate that for me.
I'm going to refer to Hannah on that one.
Yeah, I guess when I'm saying in English, I say immigration authorities.
Okay.
Interesting. It's just kind of interesting update on that. They actually changed the name of the Ausländerbehörde to the Landesamt für Einwanderung because for a lot of Germans perceive the word Ausländer as being kind of hostile and having a negative connotation. So they changed the name of it. So
interesting. Yeah. Well, I ended up getting stuck there for a few times. It was quite crowded, but I think that was maybe not a uniquely Berlin experience so much as it is just like being, you know, a foreigner, for lack of a better word, an Ausländer in another country. I thought it's such a big city that, you know, but it was very easy to meet people. I felt like people were very open, you know, at like clubs, restaurants, parties. that was the vibe, at least back then. You asked me about challenges. Now I'm talking about good things. See, I only remember the good things now.
That's okay. That's just as good.
I'm trying to think. Some of it, I found it hard to like run errands because like I think I still tried to buy groceries like an American. Like, you know, most Germans will like go to the grocery store a few times a week and just get what they need. And I would go and buy like all this stuff and I could barely get it home on the subway or the tram. Like, so I had to anyway make some changes. But anyway, those are some tidbits. I'm sure I could think of something better.
Hannah, still somewhat the same? Is the distance and the time to cover distances from A to B still atrocious, or has it improved? Has it gotten faster, more efficient? So what's the situation like right now?
Well, I don't think the transport infrastructure has actually changed too much. I mean, there's a few more stops. They actually recently opened a new stretch of the subway line as of December, which is very exciting, right through the middle of the city. So you can get to like some of the main touristy areas by subway, which you couldn't before, strangely. But in general, yeah, if you live on one end of the city and all of your friends on the other, you're going to be spending a lot of time on your bike or in the train. So a lot of people are very careful about targeting where they live based on where they're going to be spending their time, since it is so large.
Also, you do have a unique perspective, I would think, comparing American student life to German student life. What's German student life like at Humboldt?
So I'll start just from the American basis, or the American understanding of kind of the typical college experience is really all-encompassing. And you spend most of your time really on campus. A lot of times, at least for the first few years, eating in the dining hall, spending all your time with other students, doing a lot of extracurricular activities through the university. That's kind of what's, I think, seen as typical in the US. And in the German university experience, you're much more independent from the university as an institution. And you can be more or less engaged depending on your desire, but you know, you're, instead of spending kind of your whole life being around campus or and around the university, you might go there a few times a week, go to your classes, spend some time studying there maybe, and then leave and go to the other parts of the city for your job, for your friends who aren't studying, and just kind of come in and out of university life rather than it taking up your whole life, like in the US.
Do you find the German version of university education more challenging, perhaps more intricate and more results producing, or is it about the same?
I think they both have challenges in different ways. And it's also hard to generalize because different American universities are so different as well. And I think German universities are more similar to each other. I think the variety within the American post-secondary school system is so varied. I think I had to work a lot harder during my undergraduate years compared to German undergraduate students, just in terms of the time spent studying, time spent reading. I think it was more intensive. So that's one thing I think that's more difficult on the US side. I think in the German system, you have to be a bit more self-disciplined and proactive about understanding where you might need extra help or where you might need to work a little harder because, the big just structural difference is, at least at Humboldt, and I think this is common, your entire grade is based on one exam at the end of the semester. And so you have to keep up with the material and make sure that you're following along, but you have no external assessment to check if you're keeping up. And so if you don't have the kind of self-reflection to be able to do that, you can really get yourself in trouble right before the exam. So I think that's a challenge.
So much less hand-holding, much more self-responsibility, and much greater risk for failure if you don't keep up.
Yeah. But then I also think, definitely, I think that's all true. But then I also think that the flip side of that as well is that you can really get yourself prepared for this one exam, and then it kind of can all fall out of your brain and the next day. Whereas I think in the more like rigorous system in the US in terms of the time you actually have to spend with the material, I think it maybe sticks with you a bit longer. At least that's my experience. Maybe other people have had it differently.
I wonder, based on all this, one of the defining elements within the American post-secondary is that you make a lot of friends, you have a lot of activities that connect you to each other, whether that's sports, which certainly is at a greater emphasis in the US than it is in Germany. Is the student connection the same, or do you all just go your own merry way when you're done with class?
I think for German students who did their undergraduate degree and farther potentially, they have in those years while they're studying a mix of friends, a greater mix of friends who they're studying with and who they're not, than in the US, where I think when you're at the university, all your entire social circle is who you're studying with. But my personal experience was a little unique within the German context because I am doing a program that's for international students. And so we were all coming to Berlin, not really knowing anybody, and could really bond over that experience. And we all very fond of each other. So I actually am friends with a lot of people that I study with, but I think that's maybe unique compared to the German students who are also attending my university.
Let's look at the inside track to Berlin. When you remember back to your days in Berlin, what would be your inside suggestion? What do you have to do when you get there? For one, a little trip down memory lane, but for another, also to see whether those things persist and they're still there and they're still the inside track and they're still the recommendations then basically being corroborated by Hannah.
Sure. Well, yeah, and you know, it's funny. I think sometimes when you live in a city, like people who are from a city, like I think you said this to me the other day, Gunter, like if you're from a city, then it's hard for you to say what the sites are because they're just like you live there and you kind of take them for granted. But yeah, I luckily had lots of people come visit me while I lived in Berlin. So I feel like I almost had like this tour set up. Okay, day one, we do this. Day two, we do this. So let me see if I can remember. I feel like I always started out in the center of the city because I've always been a fan of Brandenburger Tor, the Brandenburg Gate. And there used to be this bus, a city bus called Bus Nummer Eins. I believe it was bus number one. I don't know if that still exists, but it was a city bus and it just happened to go by all the sites. So you could like get off the bus. Like I think it stopped at the Berlin Cathedral. Like it went down Unter den Linden, which is one of the main old thoroughfares in Berlin. Let's see, you know, that covered, I'm blanking on some of the names, but, I think there are some monuments and the museum's island in that neighborhood. I was a history major. I love everything museum. And so for me, my guests had to go to the Pergamon Museum that has a lot of ancient Greek and ancient culture. We went to there's like an the Altes Museum, right? There's like an old museum like that. It's the old museum. That's the translation. And then I love the art museums. Like you can see anything from, you know, like ancient early art to like the most crazy modern art. So I think the Hamburger Bahnhof was a modern art museum. We used to go to the Alte Nationale Galerie, the old National Gallery, the Gemälde Gallery, I love the museums. So people had to go there with me. And, you know, we would go to, I think the East Side Gallery, is that where you can see like paintings artists made on the pieces of the wall? And then there's also that there was an interesting exhibit, I think called Topography of Terror. It like goes into some of the old bunkers or a secret prison that the Nazis had built in the middle of the city near Potsdamer Platz. And then yeah, we would go to Potsdamer Platz and see the sort of marvels of modern architecture there. So yeah, those are a few. The Holocaust Memorial that they built near, like, I think it's called the Memorial to the Murdered Jews of Europe, I think is the translation, with like all these kind of stone pillars. I think that was created after I moved. So I'd like to see that and walk around it. I don't know if you've been there, Hannah. So there's my brain dump.
It is like you've actually never left. Hannah, what of all this is still in existence? Is it still the tour that you would do? Where have you been of all the places that Erin just rattled off if it had been yesterday?
Yeah, your memory is extraordinary. That bus you described does still exist. It's the 100 rather than the one. But
I might be wrong. Maybe it was bus 100. I don't know. But yeah, okay.
But yeah, it still exists. So if you want to do a bus tour on the cheap, you can take the 100 and go past all the kind of main sites. And I haven't been to all of those museums, but a few. And I would add, and maybe it's newer as well, the Deutsches Historisches Museum is really a fantastic history museum. And then it might also be a bit newer, I'm not sure. I think my favorite art museum is the Berlinische Galerie, and it's an art museum that is all focused on Berlin artists, both historical and contemporary. So they have some really interesting, they have an interesting permanent collection and some very cool rotating exhibitions or temporary exhibitions, that's the word.
Obviously, different perspective, different tours. Which places do you recommend and where would you take visitors through right now? I mean, considering pandemic and lockdowns, I get that, but let's just pretend that everything is back to normal. Where would you go?
Well, my favorite place to go in the city that is also fun to take visitors is the Tempelhof Airport. It's a decommissioned airport right in the center of the city, and you can most of the time you can go into the airport hangar, and sometimes there are exhibitions or tours going on, and then also the runways are still there, and it's just a massive park. I think one of the facts that people like to say is the Tempelhof field is larger than all of Monaco, supposedly. So that gives you kind of, and it's just an incredibly unique type of park because you can rollerblade, bike along the runways, and there are people doing wind sports, wind surfing and wind boarding up. And yeah, so I love to take visitors there and go biking around the airport field, and also just all the other amazing parks that are in Berlin. As Erin said, Berlin is enormous, and there's just an unending number of huge, amazing, beautiful parks to just hang out in, bike around, find little secret corners. So there's the Volkspark Friedrichshain and the Treptower Park that also has a memorial built by the Soviets. That's a grand, massive memorial to the Soviet World War II soldiers. And it's a stunning experience. And it's right in the middle of this park. Yeah, Humboldthain in the north is also another park. I'm very obsessed with parks, as you can tell. And I like to bike around. And I also like to take visitors to some of the weekly street markets. In particular, there's one in the district Neukölln on the Maybach-Ufer, so the Maybach. There's a lovely weekly market there on Tuesdays and Fridays that's where most of the proprietors are Turkish Germans. So they're selling a lot of Turkish specialties. So you can buy your vegetables and fruits and get some delicious börek or other Turkish delicious things and go have a picnic. And I also, I think Aaron also mentioned that there are two operas and there's a third opera now. And I like to go to the opera because it's unusually cheap here since it's subsidized very heavily by the government. And
what's an average ticket price?
I don't know the average ticket price, but they range from being in the low 20s, and then I think they can go up much higher than that. But you can, if you're a regular, you can just buy a regular ticket from starting in the low 20s. And also if you're 30 years old or less, you can get what's called a classic card for 15 euros. You get a card that is valid for 1 year and you can use it to get opera tickets for 10 euros, concerts at the Philharmonic, the Berlin Philharmonic for 8 euros, theater. It's incredible. It's an incredible deal.
It's a very interesting concept to make it affordable for the younger population and instill that cultural wherewithal, if you will, that this is present and there for you at all times. Really smart move, actually.
Yeah, I'm really bummed because I turned 30 this year, so I'm going to have to start paying real prices.
Suddenly adulting.
Yeah, I feel like we forgot Alexanderplatz and the Fernsehturm. I don't know if you ever tower.
I mean, I've been up the Fernsehturm once, and I think it is a really interesting experience. But I personally hate spending any time around Alexanderplatz. It's very unpleasant, in my opinion.
Why is that?
It's not the prettiest corner.
There's this concrete everywhere. It's very chaotic, and there's some interesting old DDR constructions that are still there, like the Haus der Statistik, which was the East German statistical office, basically. That building is still there, but a lot of the newer constructions are just horribly ugly. And there's a mall that is useless, and it's not my favorite area.
Going back to the last two questions, actually, that I do have, going back to the cultural perspective, when you take basically the top three, if you will, of things to do that Berliners really appreciate when you do them as a foreigner, and then of course the opposite, the three absolute no-nos. What would be three things that people are commonly applauding you for and are surprised by as not being a native Berliner and really appreciate you for?
Oh, wow. That's a very good question. I'm going to have to think a moment.
I'm going to say speaking German.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that gets you far. People really appreciate when an American speaks German, right?
I think this would be widely appreciated. There's unfortunately a lot of people in Berlin who are very poor and try and scrape by collecting bottles that are to deposit. And one thing that you learn after being in Berlin for a little bit is that it's kind of a token of solidarity to, rather than just throwing your bottle that you can get a deposit, the deposit back from, rather than to throw that in the garbage, but to like carefully set it near the garbage so that if someone wants to try and collect it, they don't have to stick their hand in a gross, potentially dangerous trash can. I think that's something that's good to know. Well, the German government certainly likes it if you pay your TV tax. And a lot of people don't know that they don't realize that this isn't an extra fee that you have to pay separately, and get themselves in trouble by racking up month after month of not paying it.
Let's switch over to three no-nos. What are the things that you shouldn't do to not immediately get the finger pointed at you?
Well, I'm a bicyclist, and the easiest way I can get myself in trouble is by bad bike etiquette, like riding on the sidewalk. Especially older Germans will not hesitate to yell at you about that. if you can learn to pack your groceries very quickly, not doing so is a big no-no. Taking a long time to pack your groceries.
So basically the Aldi principle, right? Where you have the cashier that goes a million miles an hour and then you still gotta bag yourself. Yes.
Everyone is so fast at packing their groceries. It's totally, and of course, like I said, I always bought too much, so I had a really hard time with that.
Yeah.
Is it still the case in Berlin that Berliners are like really into their dogs? Like they love dogs. Like I felt like the dogs in Berlin, you always had to be careful not to step in a dog deposit on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of tourists sometimes don't see those. You have to be aware of the dog deposits. I'll just say that.
yeah, definitely. Especially in the grassy areas, being careful of that is important. But I'm always amazed. Something that I truly admire about German culture is how well they train their dogs. It's unbelievable. You go into a grocery store and often you see a dog waiting very patiently, not tied up, right by the door for their owner to come back outside. And then they just trot along next to them. It's amazing.
Last question that I have is, knowing what you know now, drawing the parallels between the US and your experience in Germany, would you come back?
To the US?
Yeah.
Not for a while. the way I see it is I want to live in Berlin indefinitely. I know that my feelings about that might change. I've met a lot of people who came to Berlin, really loved it, felt like they were going to live here forever, and then after five to 10 years, slowly started to fall a bit out of love and move back to their home countries or somewhere else. So I recognize that might happen to me as well. But for now, I'm in for the long haul.
All right. Erin, would you want to go back and stay?
Oh, I don't know about stay forever. but clearly I need to go back and visit when I can. So I was actually supposed to go to Berlin this winter for fun, just to visit, but that was postponed. Mm-hmm. So I will do all the things, hopefully, as soon as we can. But yeah, I was just curious, Hannah, what neighborhood do you live in?
I live in North Schöneberg. So Berlin, it has very much what they call a Kiezkultur, so a city culture that's very neighborhoody, if that's the word. And so my neighborhood is the Nollendorf Kiez, because it's right by Nollendorf Platz, sometimes called the Regenbogen Kiez, which means rainbow. Rainbow neighborhood, because it's also the historically gay quarter. But yeah, that's where I live.
Well, Hannah, thank you so much for making time tonight, your time, and morning our time, almost noon. certainly appreciate you hanging out with us, hopefully to be continued in the future at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on anytime. And if either of you ever do have the chance to come back post-pandemic, please get back in touch. That'd be great.
We will do that.
Likewise. Come visit the GAI sometime.
Yes, come teach a class.
Right. Yeah.
All right, Erin, also, of course, thank you for coming on and sharing your, what's basically your memories of Berlin.
That's fun.
And that's it. Episode 2 of 2021. Not bad, we're off to a good start. With that, this is Günther signing off. Thanks again for being with us. If you have questions, topical suggestions, or you would like to hear from particular guests, please just shoot us a message to podcast@gai-mn.org. And with that, we'll talk to you again soon.